Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into now the off-season around here. All of our off-season conversations brought to you by our friends at Cole Roofing and Gordy Energy. Bill Cole joins us. You can find him out on the front of Baltimore Positive. I'm talking so much about our sponsors as we go into another year. People that have been with us for a number of years. Leonard Raskin, I'm wearing the Raskin Global shirt. Lots and lots of people, quite frankly, Dennis Colazzos at Coons Ford. People that you know, I know, we like. The off-season for all of us, we all sort of met as Ravens fans, right, Luke? Like, This is when it gets weird, and it's even weirder. And I know we talked about this in a previous segment. 6-game losing streak that they have to pound on for the next 9 months. You think Harbaugh was a little chippy in the postgame. I would think the whole organization is going to be chippy. And this is where we forget about Big Ben, and he's playing next week, and there's playoffs and all that. We start talking about the 14th draft choice around here and all the internet coaching out there. Fire Greg Roman and replace Wink Martindale and that John Harbaugh, he ain't no good. All of that. Now comes the off season, as we say around here. And it might be ugly. I mean, it might be ugly in a big way, given that they've lost 6 games in a row and were 8-3 and didn't make the playoffs.
Well, and that's where you do look at the magnitude of losing 6 games in a row and going from being the number one seed in the AFC in week 13 and to being out of it 6 weeks later. And I don't say that suggesting that you press the nuclear button and fire people left and right, but you also have to understand the weight of losing 6 in a row and understanding that's a big deal. And I think the key for this offseason, as I wrote at BaltimorePositive.com, is going to be to react without overreacting. This was a very injured football team. We know that. We've known that going back to late August. We've known that throughout the course of the season with the list and the attrition just growing in terms of players lost, kind of finishing off with losing your top cornerback in early December and losing your franchise quarterback the following week in Cleveland. So you have to acknowledge that. However, I think you said it last week, talking about the need to not be too dismissive of the losses late in the season. I think you need to be careful that you're not kind of bordering or venturing into territory where you're complacent and you think everything is totally fine. That's where I think you need to find that right balance and saying, okay, what do we look at about this football team that we can address and say that wasn't good enough and we need to add here. We need to make a change here. We need to augment. We need to subtract something. I think those are very fair questions. I think from a coaching standpoint, to your point, you know, there was plenty of chatter on Twitter about fire this guy, fire that guy, but
they had no players at the end.
I understand. I will say this to throw a bone. So a proverbial bone, so to speak, to people that were talking about that. I do still have concerns about this passing game in the big picture. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that the offensive line wasn't right all year. And is it going to be right next year with Ronnie Stanley? What's going to happen at offensive tackle? Yeah, I know they have Jawan James and they'll have Ronnie Stanley coming back. And they have some other guys that are under contract. And Patrick McCary played well, even though had some issues staying on the field, which, you know, is something you don't like to see. But do they have enough there, or do they need to add an offensive tackle? You know, do they need to add one in the first round, second round, third round? I think that's a very fair question.
And where's that money coming from when they start paying the quarterback $22 million this year and $42 million the following year?
Sure, no question about it. So I'll hear questions about Greg Roman. Does that mean I think they should fire him? No. But in the same way we were talking about this after the Buffalo playoff loss at this time a year ago, I think there is a lot of unknown there, because I would say, yeah, of course, you didn't have Lamar Jackson down the stretch, but let's call a spade a spade. Lamar was not trending in a very good direction in the 3 to 4 weeks, you know, maybe even 5 weeks prior to the injury. So I'll hear questions about that. And if the Ravens were to make a change, it would surprise me, but it wouldn't stun me, just because there were some questions even before the 6-game losing streak. But to kind of go back to what I said about reacting without overreacting, to me, you look at every issue that this football team had and you say, all right, how can you make it better? Well, Tyler Huntley wasn't very good the last 2 weeks of the season. Lamar Jackson's going to come back and be better. Their cornerback situation was in horrible shape at the end of the season. Marlon Humphrey and Marcus Peters are going to come back. We'll see about Anthony Averett's contract status. We'll see what happens with Tavon Young as it relates to the salary cap. Presumably Jimmy Smith's going to retire and you're going to get younger at that spot. So, you know, you go position by position. And to me, you look at it and say, do you have in-house options coming back that are going to be better? Running back's a great example. You know, as much as Devontae Freeman played well down the stretch, clearly he was not what the Ravens would have expected to get from J.K. Dobbins or Gus Edwards. Those two guys will be coming back. Do I think they need to go out and draft a running back in the first round? Absolutely not. Do I think there's some value potentially to a day three running back to add to the mix as a little bit of an insurance policy for those guys coming back from injuries? Yes. So there you go. We've talked about quarterback. We've talked about cornerback. We've talked about running back now. And there are reinforcements returning next year that you can pretty safely assume they will be better at those spots. Now, other issues that you do have that are legitimate. Defensive line. Calais Campbell, going to be a year older and is going to be a free agent. Brandon Williams, same story for him. Derek Wolfe didn't play all year. I'm guessing he's probably not going to be back, although he is under contract for 2022. Justin Ellis is going to be a free agent, another 30-something. So they need to get younger there. There's no question about that. And that's going to be an undertaking. That's going to be something that is not just, oh, go sign one guy and you're fine. I think that's going to be a multi-pronged attack where they might need to sign someone or acquire someone in the way they did with Calais Campbell and Derek Wolfe 2 years ago. But I think they need to invest some meaningful draft capital at that position group because the cupboard's pretty bare beyond Justin Madubuike, who I thought was fine this year, but certainly did not look like he was the next Haloti Ngata. So you're going to need some work that has to be done there. That's a position where I think you do have to react. And I think they knew that even before the season started, that was probably going to be a position that you look to. Pass rush. At times, you liked what you saw from Odafe Owe. I'm encouraged by what I saw from him overall, but Justin Houston is a free agent. Pernell McPhee's most likely not going to be back. Jalen Ferguson, you know, played a little bit down the stretch, but certainly haven't, you know, seen anything that's going to make him look like a guy that you're going to be really excited about moving forward. So we'll be talking about pass rushers again. So my point is, as I just kind of systematically went through a half dozen position groups, that's what the Ravens need to be doing at this point, is reacting and saying, all right, what do we need to address? What do we need to fix that doesn't necessarily have in-house solutions, or we're not just going to chalk it up to saying we weren't very healthy there? And then on the flip side, you need to come to some semblance of peace and knowing that, all right, our running game wasn't nearly as good. Yes, we can talk about the offensive line, but yeah, Devontae Freeman and Latavius Murray and Le'Veon Bell, yeah, they weren't as good as Gus Edwards and J.K. Dobbins. So, you know, you don't want to overreact and start fixing problems that, you know, were kind of just out of your control in terms of just talking about health and some rotten injury luck. Now, do you need to go and look at your offseason training and conditioning and your medical staff and your training staff? And do you maybe find some tweaks here or there, some changes here or there that you need to make? Maybe. There's no question that you need to really look at that with some very careful scrutiny. But I'm guessing as you look at the entire injury picture, I'm guessing a big part of that, Nestor, is going to be bad luck. They had rotten injury luck, and you're not going to eliminate all injuries. In the same way that I would also say you can't just plan that you're not going to have zero injuries in 2022. But I think you do have to have some acknowledgement in saying, because of a quarterback now who's going to be making $23 million at a minimum for his fifth-year rookie contract option, in light of other positions you're going to have to address, there are going to be some position groups where you're just going to have to say, yeah, we're going to have to depend on J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards to come back healthy rather than go out and draft a running back in the first round. That would be an overreaction, in my opinion. So, you know, it's going to be a lot of that balancing between, all right, what are our most pressing needs that we can control, something we do need to tweak, whether it's on the player personnel side or whether it's on the coaching side. You know, it's not to say there won't be a change or two or an addition or two to the coaching staff, but you have to do that. But then you also have to look at Yeah, they had some rotten luck in terms of injuries. I think you look at where they stand from what their record was in one score games. They were 6-6. They had great in-game fortune early in the season to win some of these close games where, you convert a fourth down against Kansas City, or you make a 66-yard field goal in Detroit, or you have a 19-point comeback against Indy. They had great in-game luck. Not talking about injuries, in-game luck in some of those games. And then what happened? That coin that kept landing on heads early in the season wouldn't stop landing on tails down the stretch. So, that's where you need to find that balance between reacting.
You played a quarter of the season with your backup quarterback, right? Yeah. So, like, it can only... If I were to write it in a silhouette and explain what happened, and we start talking about two running backs out of this, out of the picture, all-pro cornerback out of the picture, your left tackle, lottery pick, $100 million left tackle, never really appears, beleaguered right tackle, aging guy fills in. I just go through the list of this. Fourth year quarterback hitting a wall, league adjusting to the radical nature of what he does. He reverted to some bad habits. I think we can go back. I think James Urban may say some bad habits that we see. And even offensively, they had bad habits about what they were doing with him, running him 21 times and having a real journalist like me in a real room where they had to look in my eyes and John had to get all steamed at me for having dared ask how Lamar Jackson run the ball 21 times, then we never hear from him again, really. They get their ass kicked in Miami, and the whole thing's never the same again, right? So I go back on all of this and say a lot of this is when you lose players and you lose man hours and you lose Pro Bowlers and you lose opportunity cost of Nick Boyle and Wolf and, the things that they might have known about Stanley – I don't know. If you would have sat down with John and he would have turned the chair sideways and turned the hat backwards and OTR'd you about how he really felt about Ronnie Stanley coming back, he probably would have said that might be a crapshoot. Maybe same thing with Boyle, both of those guys. And certainly the coy way they played the Lamar pinky, inky, winky, toe, ankle, low, high, sprain, bruise, foot thing that went on the last month here. When he couldn't walk, right? And just the offseason is going to be rough. When you lose six, and I don't think it should be rough. I think John did a great job. I think, and I'm not after Roman or Wink, Wink's running around with guys he didn't know 3 weeks ago and trying to play defense with those guys. Whole different game. And I don't think regular people can understand when Kayvon Seymour comes in and when Tony Jefferson, who they all know and know his name, Tony Jefferson's a stranger to half the guys in this locker room because it turns over that quickly.
Yeah, well, and we've talked about this for a number of years, philosophically, how they've built their defense from the back forward, right? I mean, their secondary is where they've invested the big contracts. I mean, even go back to Earl Thomas, who's not even here anymore, but there's still, some lingering ramifications with that. And that didn't work out. But when you are talking about your two best players on defense really being, and with apologies to Calais Campbell, who still played at a very high level the last couple of years and was paid very handsomely, but Marlon Humphrey and Marcus Peters were your two big, big-time contracts that you had invested in.
If we were to talk in August and said, what gives them a chance to win the Super Bowl? Luke, I have you on Sky Radio. We'll do Super Bowl. What makes the Ravens? Well, they have the best corners in the game, right? You would have said backside, Jamar Chase and these young guys, young bucks running around. Marlon and Marcus, I'll take my chances with them in a big game, in a big situation on third down. I like those guys. Now, can we get after the quarterback? Can we stop the run? You would have had all those questions,
sure. But
you would have said the cornerbacks, we're not going to lose because of those guys.
Right, no question about it.
Not to mention the leadership that Peters brings and sort of the extra hot sauce or piss and vinegar or whatever you would call it that he brings, because he definitely has that.
Oh, I mean, he is certainly an alpha male, alpha dog, however you want to characterize it. Kind of that old Raven, right? That old Ravens mentality that, that's kind of waned a little bit in terms of attitude, in terms of being demonstrative in the way that you think of Ray Lewis or some of those guys, or even Terrell Suggs showing up as legend of the game on Sunday wearing the Bane mask.
I was going to say, you didn't have to go too far into the Wayback Machine to find a little piece of that, right?
No question. So they missed that. I mean, they really missed that big time this year. And, oh, yeah, you're talking about a really good football player that they didn't have all year. You know, a guy they lost a few days before the season started. This is not to make excuses. Look, there are things they need to address, and I just went through that a few minutes ago, and there are position groups that they're absolutely going to have to address. I would even say, looking at corner, as much as you're fully confident Marlon Humphrey will come back from a pec injury, I mean, that's not something that you're going to think of in terms of having long-term ramifications. At the same time, Marcus Peters, entering the final year of his contract, he's a year older, and he's coming off of a major knee injury. There is going to be a decision that needs to be made there. Even if it's not necessarily saying you cut him, but there might need to be an adjustment there. Or you might need to look to draft a corner relatively early with that thought in mind, because Anthony Averett's a free agent and Jimmy Smith's probably not going to be back. And if he is, he'd be 34, another year older than he was this year, which would seem too old, especially late in Sunday's game, as we saw.
Oh, and you got Queen playing sort of out of position, but in his new position, and you know what that means financially and what that means in draft capital for them.
No question. So that's where we kind of look at this and say, all right, they have work to do. Does that mean they have so much work to do that you're replacing Wink Martindale, or you're firing this coach or firing that coach? I don't think so. That doesn't mean he's perfect. Doesn't mean that there aren't some adjustments that need to be made. Doesn't mean that there weren't scenarios over the last 6 weeks of the season where they got caught in maybe the wrong defense, or maybe he was trying to, you know, have a guy do something that he wasn't, you know, but you learn from that. And
I think John's very comfortable with these guys, quite frankly.
I think so.
I mean? And I think John would also say, who inherited Rex Ryan at one point, right? So, yeah. And Mike Patton in a different regime at one point. I think John would say 14 years into this, if I was really sitting with John, and I haven't really sat with John in 2 years, and that's another story for another day, but to be able to read the tea leaves as to where they are, Steve's absentee at this point. Steve's not firing a 70-something-year-old team president right now. Steve's not going to be out on the search for the next Dick Cass, the next Eric. Eric DaCosta is his guy, and John Harbaugh is his guy. And I think in the case of Wink, and some people would think Wink can get a head coaching job, and I know there are a lot of media people around town and, you know, always throwing out flyers for Wink is getting a look. If anybody's getting a look, it's this week, right? And this is the week people get jobs or don't get jobs, including John's brother, right, who might wind up in Miami or Las Vegas, or who knows? Las Vegas is playing this week. They can't fire anybody. And if you read Purple Rain 2, you'll see Rich Bisaccia once cost John Harbaugh a job. So there, little ancient history, Boston College special teams coach thing there for you. By the way, I released a Purple Rain 2 Chapter 1 almost by accident in the middle of the morning. I found it on the internet, put the picture up. I'm like, just go find it. It'll give you something to read. We had 3% chance to get in. I just would say this. I don't think there's any shakeup, dude. I mean, I don't. If there is, I have no tea leaves to read. You know, I'm not on the bat phone with Eric DaCosta or John Harbaugh to know what anybody's doing. But I would say this, if I'm Bisciotti, if I'm an owner, if I'm a PSL holder, if I'm a stakeholder, if I'm a wife at home has to explain why my husband's team didn't play well. If it has to be explained to you what happened, you and I have done a great job of doing this week after week after week with losing football players and salary cap and playing with Tony Jefferson and playing with Anthony Levine on defense and the difference between Alejandro Villanueva playing left tackle and Ronnie State. Like all the football side of this, if you witnessed it, I don't know how you could be angry about it. I mean, I really like, what do they always say? Are you not entertained? I went down believing like a fool that they could still make the playoffs at 3:30 on Sunday. So I was hooked in on the football side of it, and I'm not angry on the football side of it. I think there's work to be done, the legitimate work that we've talked about, but I'm not fire anybody or they underperformed or, you know, I need somebody's ass in a folder under my desk or it's going to be a tough time to go down to Jupiter and have to sit with Steve around the fire pit and explain a call I made on the goal line to go for two. You know what I mean? Like, I think we've played that out about losing those games, and I don't think it made any difference anyway, because I don't know that Lamar could have played next week. I don't know that it would have mattered. They weren't winning the Super Bowl. Was it? It wasn't their year, is what I would say, Luke.
Yeah, I mean, and I'll disagree a little bit in terms of I completely understand frustration and being a little angry. You lose six in a row, and certainly you look at in the fashion in which they lost a few of those games where you're talking about 2-point conversions at the end. There's certainly room for second guessing. And I say that as someone who basically agreed in each of those instances. The one that I, you know, if you recall the Green Bay game, I kind of thought John got caught in between the analytics side, which would have said go for two on the previous touchdown, not saving it for the very end. Or you play for overtime, where John kind of got caught in between and kind of ticked everyone off, ironically, both camps. But you know, beyond that, I think there is a sense of, yeah, there's some anger, there's some frustration there. But at the same time, I think there's again, it goes back to what I said, reacting without overreacting. And, you know, I'll hear some concern about Greg Roman. I said that last week. I said that earlier in the season. I said that last offseason. And that's where it's frustrating, because you feel the passing game specifically, it was an incomplete evaluation because Ronnie Stanley wasn't right from day one and didn't play after that. And even Lamar Jackson, who played very well over the first 5 weeks of the season, that kind of went away, and then he gets hurt. Now, do I think that equals needing to fire Greg Roman and blowing it up offensively and bringing in a new OC and doing all that? I'm not there yet. I'm certainly not, but I can understand people being concerned. I can understand people feeling a sense of we didn't really get answers there. And I think that's what's frustrating when you have a season like this with all these injuries. Look, you tell anyone that everything that's going to happen and everyone they're going to lose, and then you say 8-9, you probably say, yeah, that doesn't sound shocking, quite frankly. But when you are 8-3, and we can talk about how legitimate what that was or not in terms of so many close wins, comebacks, all of that, but you're 8-3, you're there, right? You're sitting right there. And then you do lose six in a row, even if five of them are one score affairs. Yeah, there's going to be a lot of second guessing, and there's going to be a lot of ticked off fans and a lot of people really wondering, why couldn't you make one play here or there? And
well, I thought it was poignant that John said that in the aftermath. Yeah, we should have been able to make one more play. That sounds like the expectation of Don Mohler and Jeff sitting behind me in section 513, literally.
Sure. And that's where I think it's understandable. Now, that doesn't mean you fire everyone. Doesn't mean I think they will or should, but that's where that's going to be what's key moving forward into this offseason, reacting and improving and getting better and addressing the things they need to address. And then the rest of it, you kind of have to let it go and say, they can't possibly be as injured in 2022 as they were in 21, especially if they look at all the things that they could tweak. Training program, strength program, training staff, whatever you need to tweak, you tweak it. And then after that, you hope for the best and you just say, we're not going to be as injured as the year before, because there aren't enough cap dollars. There aren't enough draft picks in the world to possibly account for that number of injuries for another year in a row. And that's where you just kind of have to let that part of it go and say they will be healthier, not completely healthy because you never are, but they have to be healthier in 2022 than they were this season.
How can I be angry in a year that ends with the magnetism and the charisma of Rick Nielsen and the great Robin Zander coming to Baltimore and playing Cheap Trick songs? It says right on the back of this pick, we're all right. We're all right. We're all right. We're going to hang in there. Luke, I want to talk about when we come back, the original sin, which is a quarterback that runs into linebackers who can't play in December and January. But I'm going to hang on to that. When Luke is here, he will not be in Owings Mills this week. He'll be in his palatial estate in Shrewsbury, hanging out, mowing there's no lawn to be mowed. Okay, sweeping the snow, doing whatever he's doing, waiting for baseball season, staring out the window like the old natural and waiting for the snow to thaw. I am Nestor. You can find us out at Baltimore Positive, WNS. AM 1570. We never stop talking Baltimore positive and football here in the offseason now.